Good morning. Welcome to the Long Live Alternative Parties podcast. Free Press Media Press, Inc., an Alternative Parties books publisher, sponsors this podcast. I'm Andrew Bouchard. Welcome to the Long Live Alternative Parties podcast. Today, Alternative Party friends, we have another exciting guest like we always have on this podcast. His name is Eric Lightson, and he's running for office, and he's going to talk to us about his campaign. So welcome to the podcast, Eric.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Eric, we're glad to have you. So let us get started by you kindly giving us an introduction to yourself, a brief biographical sketch.
Oh, man, these things. All righty. My name is Eric Lightson. I was born in the middle of Wisconsin, moved to southeastern Minnesota, or as we like to call it, Bluff Country, in 1999 when I was 14. So I did high school here, went back over actually to the Chicago area to do college and everything, met the love of my life, got married, and we decided to move back to Bluff Country to raise our family. I'm a substitute teacher and a stay-at-home dad. I graduated with a teaching degree in 2007, so I can probably tell you how everything went with me finding a teaching job, especially in Wisconsin after Scott Walker happened. So just kind of bounced around, done a little bit of everything. I've pumped out boat toilets. I've worked overnights in a bakery. I've been a substitute teacher. I've worked in special ed in schools. I've been a summer theater performer. I've been a little bit of everything. And so I found myself in a position, especially after 2020, where I could take some time to do a full-on run for Senate because everything was so crazy in 2020 that me staying home with the kids actually helped us gain money because childcare is way too expensive. And so I'm sitting in a place where I can actually, just kind of manage it, doing the subbing here and running for Senate because I think it's about time we need more working class candidates on the ballot. So Minnesota has a good, strong history of third parties. I'm lucky enough to be able to get on the ballot with the Legal Marijuana Now party, which if you're curious what we stand for, it's right there in the name. And I'm able to be on the ballot and get my word out because, like I said, we need real people on the docket. It's just far too often you just kind of see two sort of, I don't know, they're almost like NASCAR cars. You know, they're up there. You can tell they're sponsored. And they just kind of go around in a big circle, and nothing ever really happens to help people down here. So I'm really trying hard to do a grassroots kind of campaign with a focus on just getting people their money back because profits and productivity have been going up for four decades, but wages haven't, and services keep getting cut, and communities keep being asked to do more with less, especially the small towns down where I'm at. So the idea is you haven't been working any less, you haven't been working any less hard, so where's that money going? If we're making more, if we're producing more, if the profits are getting bigger, money's got to go somewhere, and meanwhile the rich are richer than ever. So I think we know where the money went that was supposed to go into your pocket. So my campaign's focused on just a simple concept of getting your money back.
Eric, I lived in Minnesota, in Mankato, and also in the Twin Cities, and I'm not familiar with the Bluff County area, so kindly explain to us where that is at and what it's like.
Right. Oh, Mankato's a wonderful town. Bluff Country is an area made up of about two counties. There's a little bit extras for a couple other counties as well, but it's mostly in Fillmore and Houston counties down here in southeast Minnesota, way down in the southeast corner, like right up against Iowa. If you know that part of Minnesota is like the foot, this is kind of like the bottom of the big toe. So we are right down there, and we are part of the driftless area, which means the glaciers missed us when they came through and flattened everything out. So we have these amazing old structures of bluffs and limestone formations, and we've got the road, these gorgeous, gorgeous roads that wind through the bluffs. You can really get lost and do some amazing driving back here, including a nationally recognized scenic byway that stretches 88 miles, stretches 88 miles from La Crescent to Dexter, and just some of the most beautiful driving you're ever going to see along a bike path that used to be on the old railway line. So way down in the southeast corner of Minnesota, absolutely beautiful. You should come take a look sometime if you're looking for it. Real classic small town experience, real classic small town folks, and just something you just don't get to see in a whole lot of other places. So
sounds like it.
So what's the name of the city
you tell
you live
I've also,
in?
In the city of... Oh, just can you tell I've worked in tourism as well? I like to support the area down here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I volunteer with a tourism group.
Yeah,
I volunteer with
a
tourism group. Because, you know, that's what we do these days. We all have little side things we do to try to help out because, you know, everybody's overworked.
Sure. So what's the city you live in?
I live in a city called Hoka, H-O-K-A-H. Not Hookah, that's two O's. That's what always happens when you try to Google it. But it's Hoka, Minnesota, H-O-K-A-H. It's actually from a Native American word meaning root, which has to deal with the Root River, which is right down here. Hoka's got 550 people in it. I live right on Main Street, which is also a state highway. And in my time, I have gone to high school in Mabel, Minnesota, which is about 700 people. I've lived in Canton, which is 350 people. I spent some time flipping burgers in Preston, which is the county seat of Fillmore County. I've worked in Houston County. So I've been all over the place, small town to small town, and I love it down here.
Wow, cool. So how'd you get involved in the Legal Marijuana Now party?
I got in touch with them right after the 2020 election. I attempted to run with the Greens in 2020, but I had to do a write-in candidacy.
Okay.
And trying to do a write-in and being told that they were not going to waive any of their requirements for signatures during a pandemic, the idea was that I needed to go, you know, through this multi-county district and try to get people to sign things when we're told we're not supposed to leave our house. That kind of threw a wrench in things. So
sure.
I looked around and I noticed that LMN has ballot access. And we actually have two alternative parties in Minnesota with ballot access because Minnesota has an awesome history of third parties dating back to the old school farmer labor parties in the 1930s, which I'm a big fan of. And so I got in touch with them and they're like, yep, we can help you out. And they've been incredibly helpful. They've been absolutely wonderful. The meetings have been fun. I've gotten to know some really great people and they've actually been sending support and everything down here. So it's been wonderful getting to know them. I love their platform. I like looking at it and seeing what it's got going on there. It's really nice to be involved with a party that supports you and brings you in as a progressive, as a leftist candidate, which I don't know if you know this or if anyone else has told you, but sometimes leftist candidates run into roadblocks with the two major parties. So.
Sure. Yes. So since you're running for Senate, you'd be representing the whole state of Minnesota. So kindly tell our audience what the demographics of Minnesota are as a whole and what are the interests of Minnesota as a whole.
Well, part of the problem with Minnesota, and I know this is an issue with a couple other states too. My wife's family is originally from Illinois. They have a similar issue, is that you have one large urban center and then you have what they call Greater Minnesota, which is made up of a lot of small towns that are kind of spread out in the rest of the state. So in Minnesota, we've got obviously the Twin Cities. We've got other urban areas like Duluth and Rochester, but it's very obvious there's a break between urban and rural here in Minnesota. The cities is where you're going to find a lot of your non-white populations, whereas out here, it's, you know, 90-some, 95-plus% white out here, a lot of old immigrant stock. It's a lot of Germans in Hoka, but you go about 30 miles down the road, you start hitting all the Norwegians. And if you're ever looking for Lefse and Lutefisk, this is the place to go. Lutefisk is not that bad. I tried it. It's not as bad as everyone says. I had some over in Rushford at the Norseland Lefse Bakery, which is probably one of the most Norwegian things I've ever said. But me growing up down the road in the Norwegian area, you know, I was the German kid. I was weird. Because even the kid whose dad was from Mexico, his mom was still Norwegian. So I've got a, like 3% Swedish, we found out through my mom's online stuff. So, I'm very, very heavily German and very heavily white. And you've got a lot of that out in the other sections of Minnesota. I'm obviously, you know, nothing's a monolith and there's always exceptions, but you get a very rural white population out here. You move into the cities like Rochester and the Twin Cities. You get more South Asians, Southeast Asians as well. Minneapolis is well known for its large Vietnamese population and Hmong population, which I know has led to some friction in the past, but Minnesota has a good tradition of welcoming refugees, which I really like. And it's allowed for some really awesome cultural fusion up in the cities. And Rochester as well, because of the Mayo Clinic, they brought in people from all over the world. The King of Jordan used to go there for his treatments.
Oh, really?
Back in high school. So we've had amazing amount of culture. And, you know, one of the best ways to introduce people to a culture, we've got some amazing restaurants. So if you're looking up in the cities, there are, I believe, Somali and Eritrean communities. There are Indian communities. There are the Vietnamese communities and the Hmong communities. So Minnesota, much like a lot of the country, has its urban areas which have a higher demographic density, but unfortunately not as much out in the rural areas. Of course, a lot of talk has been done about the issue with schools and the performance gap, the achievement gap, which seems to happen between white and non-white students in some of Minnesota schools, which is something we definitely have to look at and see if we can't fix, because as we all know, de facto segregation is still a thing in many different places, and that's going to have to be taken care of. That's going to have to be something we understand so everyone can get the same opportunities. There's issues regarding funding and not just in within the cities, but there's issues regarding funding and community success out here in the rural areas as well. So what we've got and what we actually got away from was a governor in the 1970s by the name of Wendell Anderson, who started a revenue sharing plan. It was called the Minnesota Miracle. He made the front cover of Time magazine for it. And basically it was getting money out to these small towns and sharing the money around. And the schools were amazing. There was a rebound. Everything is doing well. Tim Pawlenty, GOP governor, got in and kind of put the kibosh on that in the early 2000s. And wouldn't you know it, small towns and small schools are suffering again because of that. So obviously we can't afford to have a two-tiered system. We can't afford to have any kind of two-tiered system. This is America. We are supposed to have equal opportunity and equality. So we need to do something to try to smooth out those issues. So hopefully when next time you can ask me about demographics, I can say we have all sorts of wonderful people and everything's going great.
Interesting. So earlier you talked about, since your party's name refers to legalizing marijuana, that's going to be part of the platform. How, given that, how do you plan to implement your vision in the Senate position?
Well, most recently, I believe the GOP in the Senate kind of stumbled kind of rear end first into sort of accidentally legalizing some of the edibles, which I think was kind of interesting and looks great on the Minnesota Senate majority leader who I'm up against, that they just kind of accidentally didn't realize they were legalizing some cannabis. But the issues still are in things like, you should be able to grow it if you want to. I can grow tobacco in my backyard if I really want to. You know, we need to stop these kinds of monopolized things where only a couple of people can grow it. We need to make it so it's fully legalized. You can do what you want, obviously within moderation, just like alcohol and something like that. We need to make sure that it's properly regulated, and if there is any way to get revenue into the state to do things like fund schools, we should do things like that. And we've got like a bit of a foot in the door here with this latest GOP bungle in the Senate, so I'd like to keep pushing for that. And I know you're saying, oh, well, Eric, if you get elected, what if you're the only third party, what if you're the only LMN guy in the Senate? I'm like, well, with the Senate split like it is, pretty 50-50, it's pretty darn close in Minnesota Senate. So what we'd be able to do is I could be a linchpin, I could easily be a leverage pin, and I could have a lot of ability to say, hey, you want something to get done? Well, maybe you got to come listen to me or your vote's going to tip the wrong way. Or maybe I'll just vote like I'm not there. Things like that. That's politics. That's how it works. So I think not only would I like to be in the Minnesota Senate, obviously, but I think it'd be great for people and for working class issues to have an outside thing like that that could bring the people's – actually, it's a wonderful way to bring the people's issues to the front, because you have the two major parties and their major donors. But if they come down to a vote where it's got to go one way or another, depending on what a third party says or what an independent says, and they know that they can't buy that independent's vote, I think that could be incredibly crucial and incredibly useful as well.
Sure. So what is your campaign strategy? How are you planning on reaching the voters?
Well, it's a good old-fashioned – oh, my chair's not squeaking too much. It is a good old-fashioned shoe leather and people power campaign. I'm getting in touch with folks. I'm getting out there pounding the pavement. I've got signs. I'm handing out paperwork. I'm talking to people because, yeah, this isn't a big money campaign, and that obviously has its drawbacks, but it also has its benefits because people know you're not bought by anybody. Your opinions are your own, which is really nice. There's no party guy who's up there going, you have to do this or you have to do that. You can't say this or you can't say that, because you know, we've got a mega million-dollar donor who'll get mad if we don't say this or that. And unfortunately, that's where it is. I mean, if you haven't noticed, most of the two parties are basically just saying, oh, things are going to be so bad if they're in charge, or but they don't actually give any kind of indicator that they'll make anything better. Like, all they can do is say they'll make it worse, because they're afraid to make anything better, because that would probably get in the way of the donors. Because, you know, the donors, what's the point? The point is to get more money. That's the point of the whole game we're playing here. So, obviously, they can't do anything that will help out the people, because that would, you know, basically turf them out of the party. So all they have left now at this point seems to be, well, the other guy will make it worse. And luckily, I don't have to do that. I can say, hey, why don't we have a higher wage? Why don't we have a UBI? Why don't we have legal marijuana and legal cannabis? I mean, why aren't you allowed to do what you want with a plant that comes out of the ground? It's kind of ridiculous. And, you know, study after study is showing there it's not that bad. It's not as bad as alcohol. It's not as bad as smoking. My dad smoked for, I don't know, almost 60 years. He smoked up until I was in college, and I saw what it did to him. I know what cigarettes can do, and I've kind of seen firsthand what they can do, and I don't remember seeing similar things like that. Anybody I know who used cannabis, so there's a lot of different options, a lot of different ways I can get up there, but providing an independent voice for something that already has pretty good support, especially in a state like Minnesota, which has such a history of being progressive, there's really, I mean, places like Oklahoma really shouldn't have beat us to the punch on this. And I think it's time for a lot of people to realize that this really just should happen. It's really not that bad. It's kind of decades and decades of thinking it's going to be terrible when everything's showing. I mean, Colorado hasn't fallen off into the sea, you know. California hasn't exploded. You know, you can switch those around if you want. I think it's funnier to think of Colorado getting ejector seated out into the ocean, but anyway.
Huh.
But that hasn't happened. It hasn't happened. It's not the world-ending thing it's everyone's focusing on. There's too much of a focus on these little social issues, which should be taken care of. There should just be an open and shut case. Cannabis should be legalized, and convictions should be expunged. If you got nailed for cannabis and there's a little amount, it really, there's no reason for it. You should be out of jail.
Yes.
So it's all just real simple stuff. This should be an open and shut case, and it's just another way. You know, it's another way for someone out there to make money off of it. So not only will they make money on promoting alternatives to cannabis, but they will also make money if cannabis gets legalized in a certain way that allows certain people to profit from that new system. So we got to make sure that not only is it fully legalized and there's expungement of convictions, but also the system they put in place is free and equal and available, you know, to all. I mean, you can brew beer in your basement if you really want to. You can grow tobacco out in your field if you really want to. I don't see a difference with everything else.
So you don't want it to be marijuana legalized, but it to be a crony system where only certain people can get permits to produce and sell it?
Yeah, no way. I dislike crony systems in any way.
Okay. So you mentioned earlier that the Legal Marijuana Now party has ballot access already because of past performance. So that's good that you don't have to worry about that, right?
Well, some things have now been legalized, but you also have some places saying that they're not going to sell it, and you have some municipalities already putting in things to stop it. So it's a giant mess. It was kind of an oopsie on the part of the GOP. So they didn't realize what they were doing, which, you know, isn't that great for the people you elect to represent you? So what you've got now is kind of sort of legalization on some edibles up to a certain amount. But, you know, I haven't seen them at Quick Trip yet. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they're supposedly letter of the law, they got legal. I have no idea where any of them are. Because it's still a big.
So it's some things, but not other things.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a halfway measure.
Exactly. And half measures are always the public's favorite, you know.
Interesting.
Half measures are well known to make everyone happy.
Yeah, probably the opposite. So, since you're in a smaller town, is there less support for the reforms of marijuana legalization there than in the big cities, or is it even split?
Well, if you go just, you know, polling and, you know, kind of a broad brush, yeah, you're going to get more support for it in the cities, just more people in the cities and more folks that have tried different things. And, you know, we do have older folks out here, and sometimes those old habits can be hard to break, and those old mindsets can be hard to break. But I think a lot of that has to do with just how people will react when, you know, they're asked on a phone call or something. If you go into a town and you actually talk to people and you give them you give them the information and you say everything that I just said, they're like, oh, yeah, well, I guess that makes sense. And especially with something like cannabis, it's getting to the point where it's like, look, I know you in particular may not like it, but your kids and your grandkids are probably already giving it a try. I mean, the statistics are showing that white people are trying it just as often as non-white people, but the non-white people get in trouble for it more, so that's a problem. So it's being experimented with. It's already being used, even though it's technically illegal. I graduated high school in 2003, and trust me, I know some people that were using cannabis. So it's getting to a point where if you sit down and talk with people and you go, it's ridiculous. I mean, we've tried prohibition with other things. It hasn't worked. You probably know someone who's already using it, whether it's medical or otherwise, and it hasn't destroyed their life. So I think what you're seeing most of the public opinion is a little bit skewed by just how polling operates. And I think if you actually get down and talk to people, which my campaign is a lot about, you'll notice that people may not be quite as violently opposed to it as they may seem.
Okay. So in Minnesota, I take it medical marijuana is legal?
Yes. Limited thing for only certain cases, only certain things, you know, and you can only get it from a certain few people.
Okay, so it's a little used in Minnesota.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I can make beer if I want to, but, you know, it's easier to just, you know, it's easier to just go to the store. And, yeah, we should have a similar thing going on there.
I've heard about, since marijuana is not legal on the federal level, I've heard people talk about how in the states the businesses have great difficulties getting access to banking. So
yes.
how would you help them do that?
Well, obviously, yeah, that's been kind of an issue. It's been a lot of places end up being cash only because there's bugbears in the system if you're trying to use banking that goes across state lines or something like Visa or MasterCard, which has to make sure to watch their own rear ends regarding what's technically a Schedule I federal substance being sold and so on. Like I said, it's a giant mess. It really needs to just be accepted and moved on. So, yeah, I would love to see more state-level things. And what I'd love to see just on many different issues is more state-level cooperation because, as we can see, the federal government's pretty darn dysfunctional right now.
Huh.
It seems like, I mean, we saw in the pandemic, it's like, can they even do what they're supposed to do and take care of people? That's up for debate. So I really would like to see more states just say, you know what, maybe we'll just have to do it ourselves and maybe set up some kind of fund or its own kind of bank. I mean, I know Nebraska has, like, its own bank. I think it's Nebraska. No, geez, don't quote me on that. But, you know, you can do a state bank. And if that would be necessary for this to have to happen, if we need to set up some kind of fund to make this happen, it's such a mess. And I don't think it'll have to go that way. I hope it doesn't have to go that far because that just seems like further complicating the issue. But, yeah, exactly. We need to do whatever needs to be done. I don't know if it's some kind of I'd have to get into the legal nitty-gritty about, like, can we just say you're protected or, you know, the feds come in? Do we got to go to the court about that? Do we have to go up to the Supreme Court? Is this a federalism issue? Are the rights of the state supreme? But then interstate commerce comes in and talks about, well, the federal government said something about it, so it should technically be their jurisdiction. Basically, the federal government needs to get off its behind and just legalize it already, which they could do, which I wish they would do. But something's standing in the way. I'm not sure what it is. I'm sure I could give you lots of theories, but I'm not sure what it is. And it's just creating messes. And I only see more of these as this keeps going. Part of my campaign would like to be setting up a state-by-state network for healthcare and saying, you know, okay, Minnesota, Washington, Oregon, California, maybe Colorado, how about New York, Illinois, all their state governments have decided we're going to try to pool resources and get us Medicare for all inside our borders. You got a Minnesota driver's license and you're in California, you can get health care. Obviously, that would probably ruffle some feathers over in D.C., but darn it, you need to do something, guys. Like, if you're not going to do it, the states are going to have to do it. Because we're running out of time here. There's not enough action being done at the federal level on anything meaningful. So it's time to start challenging them and saying, if you're not going to do it, the states are going to do it.
Sure. So Minnesota has a gubernatorial race this year, right?
Yes.
Okay. So what are the candidates? I'm thinking if you get elected and you have a bill in there that's supporting legalization of marijuana, would either of the parties be inclined to sign that?
Well, like I said, there's going to have to be some politics, and you also got to use the court of public opinion. You got to say, hey, I've got it up here. These are the guys that are standing in the way. Let them know. Get in touch with them. Tell them, what are you doing? This needs to happen. And that's going to have to be that's part of what I'm planning to do in the Senate, is just to never shut up. I mean, you hear me talk. You know I can go on and on. My dad was an old farmer. I learned how to talk from him. I can talk forever. So just the idea of just got to be loud. You know, you got to be loud. You got to keep bringing it up any chance you can and making sure you're blaming the right people and getting word out, making sure people know internet and social media is obviously a double-edged sword but can be really great for getting words out just with regular people and just saying this has to happen. And I know that there's already some DFLers that have talked about legalizing. So making inroads with them, I know the party's obviously going to raise their hackles at that. But then it comes down to, well, yeah, the party says this, but my district wants this, and I don't want to get voted out. And, you know, it's time. We have to get rid of the monolithic grip that party leadership has on things, and we need to start people voting independently in their minds, not just at the ballot box.
So what interest, what big powers don't want marijuana to be legalized? Is it the alcohol companies? What organizations don't want marijuana to be legalized?
You know, like I said, I can give you lots of theories. There's some theory it's the tobacco companies because they're afraid they'll lose market. There's theory it's the alcohol companies because they're afraid they'll lose market share for it. Obviously, there's other people with they have sort of moral objections based in, you know, really outdated stuff and ideas that were sometimes pushed by those companies who didn't want to lose the market share. So I don't want to get too much into tinfoil hat territory, but there's obviously some kind of thing going on. Someone doesn't want to see this happen, whether it's a combination of all three or it's one or two of them. I'm not entirely sure, but as the state, you know, as we start to see more and more of the older generations become no longer with us, I think you're going to see a sway in public opinion because it's not really much of an issue with the younger generations. They seem to be okay with it, and you just can't stop progress. You know, growing up, going to Mabel Canton High, it sure seemed to me, now, like, I didn't go around doing a survey or anything, but it sure seemed to me that, you know, a lot of different people from a lot of different walks of life were enjoying themselves, so to speak. And, you know, it wasn't just, you know, there's the old, like, 1970s joke about who are the guys, quote-unquote, smoking pot. But that doesn't seem to really be a thing. It seems kind of like it's become a lot more democratized.
Huh.
And like I said, when I was in high school, and that was 20 years ago, it seemed like people from several different walks of life were having themselves a good time. So I think as we keep going, you're going to see less and less public, just like you're seeing in other states as well. You're going to see less and less public outcry.
All right. Sounds good, Eric. So, Eric, tell us how our viewers, our listeners, can support your campaign.
All righty. Well, feel free to give me a call or shoot me an email over at the website, ericleitzen.wordpress.com. That's my whole name, ericleitzen.wordpress.com. You can get in touch that way. There's a Venmo if you feel like kicking a couple of bucks my way. It's venmo.com/ericleitzen again. That's the nice thing about having a weird name. The URLs usually aren't taken.
True.
There's not too many Leitzens. We're a bit behind the Smiths and the Joneses, let me tell you. But yeah, just get in touch. Support me on Facebook and Twitter. Again, /Eric Leitzen. Or is that /? I always get those messed up. But mostly just get out there, spread the word. I know I'm supposed to get up here and be like, give me money, but, like, I've never been good at that. You know, I'm from an old Catholic family. My parents were, you know, raised pretty Catholic, so I just always assume I'm terrible and awful. So, you know, I'm just always just covered in guilt from, you know, my old Catholic grandparents and stuff like that. So I feel bad asking for money. You can go over to the Venmo if you want, but get the word out, share it around, let people know. Especially within Minnesota. If you know anybody who lives down in southeast Minnesota, let them know. They can come and get in contact with me. I'm out and about talking with everybody. Just appreciate support any way you can. This is going to be a long, fight. This is going to be way beyond 2022. This is going to be way beyond, well, me, probably. It's bigger than just me. I mean, I'm 37, but I'm not planning on stopping fighting anytime soon. So we're just going to keep going. Keep saying what we believe is the right answer, and we'll see what happens. So, there you go.
Sounds good. So, what was the website address again?
ericleitzen.wordpress.com.
Okay.
We're real fancy here with the free website.
Hmm. All good.
But real simple, real easy. Facebook and Twitter, of course. I'm on there, so.
And you said Venmo,
don't have an
right?
Instagram. Yeah, Venmo as well. Don't have an Instagram yet. Just still getting the hang of a smartphone because it was cheaper to just have a flip phone forever. I'm talking to you on a flip phone right now.
Oh, my. Wow.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Oh, yeah. Save money anywhere you can.
Good point.
Save money. It'll do you good. That's my motto.
Sure. Thank you for coming on the podcast today and talking about your exciting campaign. We appreciate it.
Is that like a garbage truck or something?
Yeah, it is a, it looks, it says I'm bringing the heat, so it might be some gas.
Okay.
Whoever's driving, something like that.
Whoever's driving, I hope they're unionized.
Good point, yeah. Let's hope that. Unions rock.
Absolutely.
All right, take care. We wish you all the best in your campaign.
Take care. Stay safe. Thanks for having me.
Bye now.
Bye.